When I was writing about Ronald Reagan, I became acutely aware of how often and how effectively he used humor to warm up crowds. Reagan had been, before he went into politics, between his Hollywood career and his political career, he was basically a lunchtime speaker. And he was a front man for General Electric. And he'd go around the country and he'd preach the virtues of electricity and all this stuff. And he would often find himself speaking to crowds who knew nothing about him and who didn't care anything about his topic. And he had to sort of figure out how to break the ice and get in. And he just developed this kind of standard pattern. He carried it over when he went into politics. And of course, Reagan lived late enough that now most of his speeches are available on YouTube. So they were recorded for television. And I could watch him deliver. I could hear the reaction of the audience. And I could sense that it was working. Ronald Reagan was somebody who could have been a very divisive figure politically because his political views put him at quite at odds with the consensus in American political history from Franklin Roosevelt until the 1980s. And although many people disagreed vehemently with his policies, almost nobody disliked Reagan. And I wondered about this because Reagan was not a characteristically friendly person. He seemed friendly, but he never allowed people to get close to him. But he gave the appearance of that by telling jokes. And as I was watching and thinking about Reagan, I thought, okay, so how do presidents do this? And I knew that presidents as far back as Abraham Lincoln would tell jokes. Abraham Lincoln didn't actually tell jokes. He told stories. And the stories were sometimes humorous, but they usually had a moral. They were stories that often made members of his cabinet and his close associates groan when Lincoln would start in on a story because it would take him 3 minutes to get to the point. But from Lincoln's standpoint, that was part of the point. He wanted to slow things down. He wanted to put things in context. He wanted to buy time for himself to figure out how he was going to do this. And so he would always couch them in this very sort of homespun style. And again, this was Lincoln understanding the changing nature of the presidency and of expectations of the presidency. George Washington was not expected to tell jokes. He did not tell jokes. George Washington may or may not have been able never to tell a lie, as the story goes with the cherry tree, but he certainly couldn't tell a joke. And he didn't want to tell a joke. And he didn't even want to laugh, because to laugh would be to, in some ways, impugn the seriousness of his office. I liken it to if you're unfortunate enough to require brain surgery. You know, just as you're about to go under, if you hear the brain surgeon, you know, yucking it up with his buddies, you wonder, is he really focused on what he's supposed to be doing? So the same thing applied to the presidency until the 19th century, when the presidency was taken over by, we'll call it, democracy. George Washington was not a president elected by a democratic populace. Most people in Washington's day couldn't vote, not even for the electors who chose the president. But things changed in the 19th century, and with them, expectations of the presidency. George Washington did and was expected to stand above the people. By the time you get to Andrew Jackson and Abraham Lincoln, the people have risen in their own estimation, so they are expected to stand on an equal footing with the president. So the president at that point at least has to appreciate their humor. The president doesn't really have to generate humor until we get into the 20th century, when the president becomes the celebrity figure in American politics that he is today. And once you get into first the radio, but especially the television age, then the ability of a president to stand and deliver and make people laugh becomes more important. And it's not surprising that Reagan, who is sort of the first really successful president on television, is the one who pioneers in this regard.
How important is it to have a sense of humor? And I look at this on two different levels. One is popularity. Polling matters. Likeability matters. But secondly, when you're negotiating with an adversary or an ally, to have that sense of humor, that likability.
Likeability is an almost essential factor in any successful run for the presidency. And it continues after you're president. If people like you, you have a much better chance of your agenda and program succeeding. I draw the comparison between Richard Nixon, when he got tangled up in the Watergate scandal, and Ronald Reagan, when he ran afoul of Iran-Contra. Viewed from constitutional, even legal perspective, Iran-Contra was probably more serious than Watergate. Watergate was an internal domestic affair, whereas Iran-Contra dealt with America's global position. Richard Nixon was forced from office. Ronald Reagan was not. He skated on Iran-Contra. And one of the reasons was that Ronald Reagan was perceived as likable in a way that Richard Nixon was not. I'm not going to chalk that up entirely to his ability to tell a joke, but likability is really important. Although with the current president, we're seeing something different because Donald Trump was not elected because he was likable. In this case, that wasn't a critical element of the successful package. I'm not going to say we're going full circle back to George Washington, but the persona and the position that President Trump has staked out is actually quite different from presidents during the last, say, 50 years. It remains to be seen whether this is a permanent change or an anomaly. And as I say on this, as an observer of the presidency, we won't know until November 2020. If this president gets reelected, then this model is something we pay attention to, is something that can go forward. If it's a one-off thing, then we can immediately go back to Ronald Reagan telling jokes.
It's interesting, the research, because you have this right in front of you, right? We're experiencing this in real time, but to research someone like Abraham Lincoln or George Washington, how difficult is that for you to dig in and to find those moments during a president's term in office where you can point to something that, there's comedy there?
This is not something I could have done 10 or 15 years ago, because the stories that presidents tell, their approach to the presidency, to their office, is something that they just come in glimmers. If you go looking for it, you can't find it. Because if you're looking for funny stories that Andrew Jackson told, there aren't books about funny stories that Andrew Jackson told. You can't even do a search under the papers of Andrew Jackson, funny stories Jackson told. You just kind of have to stumble upon these things. And I've been doing this business of American history and writing about presidents for a long time. So it kind of just adds up until eventually I've been approaching this topic of humor in the White House to a class that I teach on presidential history for some years. But when Gleaves Whitney and the Hauenstein Center invited me back again this year, I thought, maybe I'll pull it together and see if I can make it work just as a single presentation.
Modern era impersonators. I think Saturday Night Live has decades of material on a number of presidents. Is that a good barometer, amplifying the comedy of the president or pointing out a president's flaws?
Well, if you are not the president, it's fair to do both. So you get to make jokes about the president. You can point out the president's flaws. You mentioned Saturday Night Live earlier. Well, that pushed things in a new direction where it's basically a weekly report on the presidency done from a humorous perspective. Chevy Chase did a lot with Gerald Ford. But the one that really sticks in my memory is Dana Carvey on George H.W. Bush. But the funniest thing I ever saw was George H.W. Bush, after he left the White House, doing an imitation of Dana Carvey imitating him. And it was absolutely hilarious. He did this to a very large audience of students at Texas A&M University. And the students were rolling in the aisles.
To jump off from there, self-deprecation. There's being funny and there's being self-deprecating.
Oh.
How valuable is that? And do you consider that kind of in the camp of comedy when it comes
to most business? Definitely. And this is crucial to the success of presidential humor. And I would say of humor conveyed by people who are in the spotlight and who have to expand their base of support as much as possible. At any given time, there are taboos as to what you can tell jokes about. And it seems lately the taboos have been getting broader and broader. It'd be really hard being a comedian in this day and age to know sort of what you can still tell jokes about. But the one thing that's always safe, you can always tell jokes about yourself. And so presidents who are the most successful are the ones who know how to tell jokes about themselves. In the first place, they get a laugh, and it's a safe laugh. But in the second place, it conveys to voters that I don't think I'm such big stuff that you can't warm up to me. Because anybody who can tell jokes about himself, and so far, it's just been men in the White House, so the jokes about himself. And I don't know if it'll be different when we have the first woman president, what kind of jokes that will elicit. But the presidents who can tell jokes about themselves, they sort of score 2 points at once. Once, they've got a sense of humor, and secondly, they don't think they're above the rest of us. And that's absolutely critical.
Is this novel material? Will there be a book generated from all of this?
I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
Well, I think it's a fascinating topic, and it does say so much about leadership.
Yeah, and a large part of the story, because presidents during the 18th and 19th century, they didn't tell jokes and themselves much. In fact, they didn't speak much. We have this notion that presidents have always been required to be public speakers. But presidents of the 19th century didn't give speeches. They gave their inaugural address. They didn't even give State of the Union addresses. Those were written messages. So much of the humor was the stories told about the presidents. And also sort of the nature of the political, you could call it the political carnival. Political rallies, which President Trump has revived, were a huge deal in the 19th century, and they often involved the sort of attack humor from one side against the other.
It's fascinating. I love this conversation, but I know you got to head out of here. Presidential historian, author H.W. Brands, thank you so much.
Delighted to be with you.